meeting of the Resources Scrutiny Committee, to which all members of the Council have been invited. It is now 6:30, according to my H. Samuel Everright watch, which is always accurate, and so we'll kick off the proceedings with the minutes of our 8th June 2021 meeting.
As published on the Council's website.
As published, that's right.
Happy to accept those, Mr. Chairman.
All in favour?
Aye.
Thank you very much. I'll sign them. There we are. Thanks very much indeed. Thank you, Andrew. Okay, apologies.
Yes, I got an apology from Councillor Godfrey, who was substituted this evening by Councillor Kemp, and from Councillor Jonathan Price, Cabinet Member for Environment.
Okay, thank you very much. Public question time?
That's nil.
Councillor session?
That's nil.
Called in items?
That's nil.
Members' items? I see that Councillor Godfrey and Councillor Pardesi have submitted the following item under the Scrutiny Committee procedure rules. And it says, we would like the committee to hear a verbal report from Mr. Tim Clegg on his first few weeks as CEO at both Stafford Borough Council and Cannock Chase District Council.
Thank you, Chair. It's very nice to be here tonight and to see everybody in person. It's been a long time since I've seen many of you, so that's a pleasure. I do feel I am here slightly under false pretences, Chair, because when you contacted me and offered me a solo spot at the newly refurbished Gatehouse Theatre, I thought maybe my amateur dramatic career was taking off again, a one-man show. You know, who would have thought, but... Never mind.
A monologue. Even.
Well, it may turn into that, but we will see. It's 2 weeks now since Bob Keane, who we all knew and held in very high esteem, left Cannock Chase and Stafford Borough Council. And as you know, for the last 6 months of Bob's career, he was acting managing director following the departure of Tony McGovern. So really, it's only the beginning of this month that I've taken over as acting chief executive of Cannock Chase District Council as well as Stafford Borough Council. In answer to the question about how it's going, well, it's going very well, and I'm most grateful to my colleagues and the members at Cannock Chase District Council who have made me very welcome, much as you all did when I first started at Stafford Borough. And as you imagine, in the last couple of weeks, but also in the preceding weeks, there's been a process of induction and meeting people and getting to know them. But the report asked me what's happened in the first few weeks as CEO. Well, let me first try and answer that question in terms of Stafford Borough Council. And in many ways, it's been business as usual. So I've attended cabinet meetings and cabinet briefing. In fact, of course, I've done that for both authorities. I've met with individual cabinet members on a range of issues. I met with the chief executive of Stafford and Rural Homes, Housing Plus, with Councillor Pert as the portfolio holder. I've attended COVID-19 local outbreak control groups, chaired weekly leadership teams, of course, in both authorities, held one-to-one update meetings with all of the heads of service here at Stafford. In fact, I've held staff briefings over the last few weeks with all of the staff at Stafford Borough, including going to the depot before their shift started and most recently visiting the crematoria to speak to the staff there, who all of those staff having done such a fantastic job during the pandemic, and just making sure that they're up to date with everything going on at the Borough Council. I've met with public health colleagues from Staffordshire County Council with regard to the development of the Health and Wellbeing Board's role and its strategy. I've discussed disabled facilities grants. I've discussed our organisational recovery plans and in particular looking at hybrid working. I've reviewed complaints we've received and how we've responded to them and what we can learn from them. Taking part in economic recovery workstream meeting. I've supported one of our leadership team colleagues when they've been off with ill health and then on holiday and tried to provide support to their direct reports to make sure that that work stream continues. I've also chaired met with the mortality management team for the whole county, again linked to the pandemic. For Carrick, I've done very much the same sorts of things. Chaired leadership teams, met with members that attended cabinet meetings and indeed a council meeting. I guess the bit that's different, obviously, has been taking some time to get to know staff there and members, and much as I did here in Stafford, going out and meeting members in their wards so that I get to know the areas better and the issues that are of primary concern to members, all of which I think has been really important. I can't say that I've dropped anything from Stafford, and indeed I was warning the chairman I'm director on call this week, so if the bat phone goes off I may have to depart quickly. I probably should have made an arrangement with somebody to phone the number. Tracy, you know the number if I get in trouble. In terms of shared services, well, as I advised Chair when we corresponded on this matter, it is too early really to report back to you. I've had a number of meetings with senior colleagues who are on the shared services officer group about how we progress things, and we have prepared for the first of the shared services board meetings. You established a shared services board for this purpose at the council meeting in May as the Carrick Chase District Council. That first board meeting, which will take place in the next couple of weeks, will consider matters primarily around governance, as set out in the report that you agree, to make sure that we are all at the same starting point, we're clear about how we're going to work together, and indeed the end that we've got in mind. I think as we get to matters of greater substance and proposals, we will clearly be in a much better position to come back with a more interesting report back to you in time. But I think it's important we get the process right, rather than do what is often the temptation to rush to the end point and speculate on that. So in a nutshell, Chair, that's how I've been keeping busy.
Thank you very much indeed, Jim. Any questions from the floor? No? I think one of the reasons we wanted you here, just to make sure you were okay. I mean, you're not looking particularly frazzled as yet. So.
I think you're looking pretty darn good, Chair, actually.
Yeah, well, should we take a vote on that? Okay. No, but thank you very much indeed for that update.
Thank you. Tim.
Thank you. Presumably we'll have another report at some point in the future.
Very much so.
Possibly in November.
I don't want to prejudge it, but as soon as we've got something to report back to you and be scrutinised on, you can...
The perfect chief executive answer.
You can be confident, yeah. I'll be there.
Okay. Thanks very much indeed. Thank you. So members, we now come to the Freedom Leisure Annual Report 2020-2021. And that is going to be presented, as I understand, by, and I'm just flicking through this silly iPad I've got, yes, by Kevin Murray, who's going to be letting us know about this report. So I think without any further ado, Kevin, would you like to give us your report?
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Firstly, I think it's probably just nice to be here again. Thank you for the opportunity to present the report. It's been a long while since we presented the last one, and a lot of work has happened. And last year was a particularly difficult year, so very pleased to be here and present what we have been up to. I've not put a presentation together as per last time, but if I can run you through the executive summary and then take questions as we go. In a nutshell, again, we were closed for a lot of the year. So last financial year, the heritage venues have all been closed for the entire year. The theatre has been closed for the entire year. We've had no events or active community activities going on for the entire year. Rowley Park was only closed for a couple of months, and we got that up and running in June. And the same with the Castle Grounds. The open spaces and the activity spaces, green spaces, have been the standout in that period. And the leisure centres have only managed 4 months worth of trading each. So, over three lockdown periods, we've only managed to be trading for 4 months in total. Some of the key items has been obviously the Theatre Arts Council funding and the money we've received from the Arts Council of England, which we think we've done a reasonable job on, and we all agree with the people that have had the tour, so thank you for attending that. 10K and half marathon events have been cancelled and rescheduled. We did manage to run the half marathon in the previous financial year, but that was the last event we held. Fitness memberships were reduced to a drastic 51% pre-COVID numbers. So when we were able to reopen, we only reopened with half of our members, which was quite a difficult issue to mitigate. Learn to Swim for our children's swimming lessons, we reopened with 74% worth of pre-COVID member base. We've probably lost in somewhere in the region of about £4 million worth of turnover, so drastic amount of income that we've lost. We have managed to secure £1.5 million worth of funding, and that includes the National JRS Furlough Scheme, the Arts Council funding, the NLRF, which is a National Leisure Recovery Fund, and various other smaller pots. Total participation is broken down later, but due to the drastic closures and only been open for a small amount of time, it's somewhere in the region of 12% of the previous year. Staffing levels was a key one, but we had 330 staff that were on our payroll prior to COVID, and at the lowest during COVID, we only had 97 staff on our payroll being paid at one point. Really pleased to say that that's back up, and it's somewhere in the region of 200 now, so since we've reopened it's going in the right direction, but it is quite a drastic number. Part of the response to COVID was, I remember I was in here actually on the 16th of March, and this was the first venue to close, and we had our partners from Arwen in Wales were up on that particular day when the announcement was made, and the theatre was the first to shut. A key part of that response was managing the buildings, keeping the buildings to an acceptable level, highly maintained, well managed. So we deployed a building management team to monitor the buildings and keep up with statutory requirements and various other things. Gatehouse, we spoke about, was awarded in two parts. So the first part of the Gatehouse funded from the Arts Council was £250,000, and then we moved on to the second phase of a further £125,000. And the NLRF was in the region of £277,000. And that's about it really in terms of the summary. It's been a relatively, not an awful lot to report for last year. But happy to take questions, that might make it a little bit more interactive.
Right, well, thank you very much indeed for that introduction to the whole thing. I have one very, very quick question. It's a simple factual thing. On page 21, what is the Sanford Award?
So the Sanford Award is something that we've applied for. We've actually just been awarded it last week. So it's for excellence in educational tours, and the team at the Heritage Venues do a fantastic job of working with local schools to deliver educational tours for the venues that we've got. So we've just received that from the Castle, and the Castle educational tour is something we're particularly proud of. But in a nutshell, it's a morning or an afternoon's worth of activity, or we do 4 days worth of activities, and the team there take them through various strategic points in the history of the venues. There's interactive games and items to look at and view and discuss and reenact. Tracy's been working really hard on it for quite a while, probably about 18 months, and so we've just been awarded that last week. So it's not in this period.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Okay. Now, members, I believe we do have quite a number of questions which are all burning to ask. Shall we kick off with who's going to be asking the first question?
That's me, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Yes, Councillor James.
How many incidents or accidents have there been at the leisure centres over this period? Depending on your answer, there will be a supplementary.
So Stone Leisure Centre had a single accident in that period. Staff at Leisure Centre was substantially higher, so that was around 30 accidents. Large portion of them, again, different make up facility, but staff at Leisure Centre has a main hall and gymnastics as a primary activity. I think 24 or 25 of them, 30 accidents were linked to gymnastics.
Were there any insurance claims on those?
Not on those specific accidents, I'll have to clarify that. There has been an insurance claim, but I'm not sure it's linked to them accidents.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, Councillor. Councillor Kenny, I gather you have a question as well.
Can you give us an insight into how you were able to operate the contract, given reduction in staff numbers from 330 to 97, and how you determined those staffing levels, please?
the answer is that I suppose we haven't, at that lowest point, we were closed, the vast majority of our service was closed. So 330 would have been probably the peak amount of staff we were using across the entire contract, across all the services, at its busiest. So that's probably coming from January of that year, the previous year, previous financial year. What we did was, 16th of March we closed the theatre and we put the vast majority of staff onto furlough. We then used that same pattern at every venue really. While we were unable to trade and unable to open, we were advised and subsequently we took the opportunity to furlough as many staff as we could, to recover as much money as we could. When we were able to open, we prioritised services that were in demand, services that we thought we could do safely and reasonably within the guidelines. And as we got them open, a lot of them were on sort of some of them were significantly reduced programmes. And again, when we sort of got going a little bit, we were closed again after, I think, 6 weeks the first time, and then less than 6 weeks the second time around Christmas. So we didn't really get going, if I'm honest. We've only got going in this financial year that we're in at the moment. So the 330 is a bit of a red herring because it's linked to the staff that were on the payroll at the time. And I think at them times we probably had, the leisure centres would have been closed, we would have got the biggest amount of staff, and we only had really the building checks teams in place, the parks, which we had full service for Rowley Park, and they were supporting the things like bin collections and management of grounds at the castle as well. Mm-hmm. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, you mentioned that you've got somewhere in the region of 200 and something at the moment.
Yeah, sorry, staff are back on the payroll.
Have you still got staff furloughed?
We've got, I think, 3 staff left on furlough that are linked to either non-income generative activities, or we've had consultation with them on a monthly period and we've chose to keep them off for various reasons.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. We've got Councillor Kemp.
Yes, how have you managed requests for refunds from residents for tickets they bought at the gatehouse? Because early in the pandemic, there was a lot of complaints about people saying we're not getting any feedback at all from Freedom Maker.
Yeah, absolutely. So quite a difficult and sensitive one that was to manage. So at the time, I think we were planning for a 3 to 4 week lockdown. So I think, you know, as positive and optimistic as we could be, we were only planning for a 3 to 4 week lockdown. And as things unfolded, it got extended and extended and extended. What we did was, with a small team at the time, is we started to reschedule shows. So rather than refund, we were trying to reschedule shows into when we thought we'd been open again. After 3 or 4 months, it became quite apparent we weren't able to reschedule the shows. And we started bringing teams of staff back on a bi-monthly basis to start engaging the customers that were holding tickets and either offer a refund, a reschedule, or a credit, or a donation. I did do a little bit of prep work on this. This was done in May. Since then, we have refunded £133,000 worth of gatehouse tickets. There was a further 7,677 donations off the back of that, which was incredible, and we're really grateful for that. And then we gave another £18,000 worth of refunds, traditional refunds for the rest of the contract in terms of swimming lessons, gym memberships, various things under the COVID guarantee. So well over £150,000 worth of refunds in total. And yeah, I suppose at the time it maybe felt slow and we were receiving a lot of feedback. But at the time as well, we were trying to optimise and be efficient with staffing, maximising the furlough. And every time we brought staff back, we were not able to claim for them staff. So it was a frustrating period, absolutely, get why people are frustrated with it. Hopefully it's been worth the wait. We've got back now, we've done a great job of refurbing the theatre. And if anyone is still over refund or think they're still over refund, then the box office is open full time as it was before.
Right, thank you. We'll bear that one in mind. I go on to the next question.
Mm-hmm.
How is the contract performing in terms of membership numbers across the 2 leisure centres? There is a chart on page 12.
Yeah, so the chart tells us how we did perform in that financial year. So there's two elements to the chart. The first one's fitness members, and the fitness members are there that direct debit for Stafford 48%, annual members 75%, direct debit members for Stone exactly the same, 45% and 81%. So returning from a 50% sort of standing start, if you like, these were the numbers that we've done, and I've given you the 25th of July on reopening, 2nd of December, and again at the end of the financial year. And the same for LTS, I gave you very similar details in terms of what it was when we reopened and what it was at the time of writing this report. What I've also done for this evening is try to provide you with an update of where we are at the minute. I don't know if that's of interest to people, but I assume it would be. But Learn to Swim at Stafford, we're now at 123% of pre-COVID numbers. So we've got a Learn to Swim scheme of 1,400 swimmers, children on a scheme at the moment. So that's better than what we had before. And there's been a large boost in requirements for children's swim lessons. You know, learn to swim, Skill for Life. It's been quite apparent. And there's been a real positive sort of comeback on Learn to Swim. And Stone's 979 against what was 936. It's approximately 104%. The number one's down there. If you will, in a second. I've not got the actual number, but the percentage for fitness memberships is only 75% recovery. So where we are at this point in time today is 75% of the pre-COVID numbers. So it's still a little way behind.
I can understand that. What I can't understand, and I'm no good at maths, I've always told the Treasury people, you know, it's nobody telling me anything about maths. I'm no good. But looking at your 2020-21 figures,
yeah,
that is so confusing, because you've lumped them all together. And I personally would have felt that it would have been more informative if you'd have separated them out and said in 2021 we had a certain number, and in 20 the rest of the 20 of the bits work as another set of numbers rather than what it says there.
I'm not sure I follow.
Well, if you look at the first one, in 2019 you had 403,000 people nearly. That's coming into the leisure centre.
So we're talking about attendances or membership numbers?
Well, attendances,
yeah.
It's participation.
It's the same to me.
It's not the same, it's a completely different metric, but if I can find the attendances, I'll do my best to answer the question.
I think what Councillor Kemp means is that the participation levels, if you look at 2019, and that's with the blue base,
yeah.
Does that mean it's January to December 2019 or April 2019 to April 2020?
I'm with you now, I apologise. So 2019, when we came to meet you before, we reported on a calendar year, and I think for us it was quite difficult because we were reporting on three different periods. The report was kind of part of the financial year linked to the birth date of the contract, which I think was December. We did participation and activity on the calendar year, and I think we reported to you in June possibly, I can't remember the date. So we were looking at three different periods in time. What we've done with this one is we were trying to align previously the annual report to the financial year, and therefore you're right, yeah, the 2019 is the calendar year, and Stafford Leisure Centre was showing 404,000 visits. What I'm trying to show you in 2021 in the financial year is we've only received 68,000 visits. So it's a significant drop off.
Mm. I mean, it's understandable the drop, but it was, to me, it was a confusing table.
It was confusing to me when we have to report three different periods in one report. So
I'll lay off with that one.
Yeah, apologise for that if it was confusing.
Okay.
That's not our intention.
Thank you, Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Kemp. Now we come on to Councillor Dodson.
Good evening. The leisure centres used to use a fair number of casual workers.
Absolutely.
Are you planning to retain the same number of casual workers? And could you tell us whether this will be on 0 hours contracts or something more substantial?
Yeah, so we did have a huge amount of casuals across the contract. I think probably what we're trying to do is contract more staff, which I would think is a better news story. We want to contract as many people as we can. If anyone's working regular hours, we're contracting them staff. We don't have any 0 hour contracts at all. There's a difference between 0 hours casual and casuals for us are non-obligated, but when it suits them, it suits the business, we use them to backfill. So we have at the minute we're using a significant amount of casuals with the pandemic, if you like. We've really required some casuals. We're recruiting casuals all the time. So yes, we do rely heavily on the bank of casuals. We're aiming to contract between 80 and 90% of our workforce. So we're only covering holidays and sickness, and we've got a more sustainable workforce, if you like. We've got better consistency because we know who's coming when, and we've got firm banks of resource.
Yeah. As a supplementary question, I was talking with some other businesses who've been finding a huge reluctance among furloughed staff to return to work.
Yeah.
And a number of them commented that when asked to come back, they found out that the furloughed staff had actually found other employment. Have you been experiencing anything similar?
It's a difficult one. I think I'm trying to break it down a little bit, so I'm remaining on facts rather than gut feeling. We've seen a significant amount of turnover due to COVID, and whether that's retirement or reduction in hours, resignations, people have found other hobbies, aspects, or wanted different alternative work. I'm sure there probably has been people that have found alternative work, but the sort of the trigger point for us would be when we arrived at a point where we wanted to invite our staff back to work.
Yeah.
I think the leisure centres, we've not experienced that much sort of nervousness, and the leisure centres were the first venues to be able to allow to open. Mm-hmm. And we put a significant package around building confidence with our staff and with our customers to bring them back to a safe environment. So, we had a comprehensive sort of consultation with all the area managers in the business, senior exec, and hand sanitizer, masks, screens, which you can still see are evident around the buildings. And we consulted with the vast majority of our staff to make sure that they felt comfortable to come back to work. There has been, small pockets of staff for various reasons, like people that were shielding or their lives have changed while furlough and while lockdowns happened, and they've not has been, been a bit more nervous, I suppose is reasonable to say. And where we've not been able to work with them, well, we've probably chose to leave them on furlough if it suited the business. Mm. And coming back out of it, this kind of end of it, we've had three goes at the leisure centres, bringing it back and putting it back into lockdown, bringing it back. And so we did get a little bit better. It got smoother each time when we've sort of re-engaged, locked it down, re-engaged, locked it down. And I think we've learned a lot of lessons for things like the heritage venues and the theatre from the leisure centres, because we've had two or three goes at that.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping it's been, better as it's gone along. And as a lot of people have told me, COVID didn't come with a manual, so some of it we're having to try and be cautious and do the right thing and be sensible about decisions that we've made. And I'd like to think that the vast majority of our staff are relatively happy with how we've managed.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
No problem, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Councillor Dawson. Now, Councillor Brown, I believe, is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How are your contracts performing elsewhere in the country? And if there are losses, will this impact your contract here at Stafford?
Well, that's the second part. There was no impact on Stafford at all. To start with, as an organisation, we had our best year ever up until just before the pandemic hit. So that previous year, 2019-20, was our most successful year. As we can measure, and obviously we've built up some sustainability to see us obviously into that, which was very helpful. We've had great support from all our other contracts across the country, and that's down to the relationships that the area managers have locally, And it's been certainly a tough year, having lots of meetings on Zoom and Teams to sort of ensure that as our partnerships, we're all on the same page really. So yes, we have good support through the National Ledger Recovery Fund in terms of £4 million across the portfolio in England. In Wales, we've had considerable support from Welsh Government and the local authorities there that has seen us through. And obviously, we've referred out in Stafford, I think it's just over £1 million for staff that were referred between April and August this year, and as a company, around £19.5 million. So, along with business rates, relief, and grants, we've explored every opportunity really to ensure that the business was sustainable beyond that point of view. Stafford's performed really well, and some of the numbers that Kev suggested there on Learn to Swim is above the company average at the moment. So the company average is around 104% of our pre-COVID numbers for our Learn to Swim scheme, which is really positive. And we are probably ahead of some of our other colleague trusts and organisations in that sense, because the teams have done so well. Memberships is a little bit more difficult, but again, around the company average of about 75, with some others in the company above that. So, absolutely, we're in a good position. We've had good support, and we're just sort of moving forward now in terms of that reactivation. So, we're pretty pleased where we are now, having been through that last 15, 16 months. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Councillor Brown. And Councillor James.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Having heard what you said about the soldiers, can I just move on to the generals? Did senior management go on to furlough, or have there been any changes to senior management to improve the efficiency and performance of the organisation overall?
Yes, senior management and executive did go on, or did have periods of furlough,
yep,
as the demands on the business changed and emerged. We also took voluntary reductions in salaries during those summer months of last year, a 30% reduction at some points. And we have had changes in our executive team. So, as Kev mentioned, it's been a period of time where some people have reflected on their roles or where they are in terms of their career path. So, for example, our marketing director, the sales marketing director, decided on early retirement back in autumn last year. We haven't replaced that role, so there's an immediate, obviously, saving in terms of the overall organisation there. And there have been others, our head of IT, again, recently retired and reflected and brought forward plans a little bit earlier than perhaps they would have if it hadn't been for the pandemic. So absolutely, yes, we've all, come together as one team, really, to ensure that the business is in good shape moving forward, so we can support our partnerships out in the local authorities.
Thank you for that.
Right, thank you, Councillor James. Councillor Nixon.
Thank you, Chair. So my question is slightly different. I wanted to, as a council, we're actively looking at ways that we can mitigate against climate change and the impact that we can have on that, and working towards some aggressive goals. I just wondered how Freedom are contributing to the climate change emergency, and how they're contributing to mitigate against the impact.
Absolutely. So we're just as passionate about it. I think we did some business planning in February and March, rolled into this year, and part of that was analysing what we were using. So I think in the year prior to this report, we used approximately 1,100 tonnes of carbon in that year. In this period, of this report, we used approximately 500 tonnes of carbon. We've put a 10% reduction in terms of this year in total. And April, May and June, we have a data for, we've significantly reduced beyond that, so at the minute it's going the right way. Some examples of how we've done it and what we are doing, theatre being a good example. So a lot of the lights you'll see when you're walking around the building, for the people who did the tour again, the ground floors had 171 out of 200 lights changed to LED. So there's a significant outlay there, but there's a significant reduction in kilowatt consumption required for them lights. That's been the go-to, if I'm honest. The LED lights is a really good sort of return on investment period, as well as a significant reduction. So wherever possible, we're we're going with that. A lot of the lights that you do see in the venue are old theatrical lights that the units were perfectly acceptable but were no longer serviceable, so we have them in stores, and the technical team again using their expertise and knowledge to repurpose them, recycle them, upcycle them, put an LED lamp in it, and therefore a lot of the lights that you'll see as you're walking around the main sort of hospitality areas are repurposed lights, if you like, so we've managed to recycle. We're trying to go paperless where possible, so you'll see the digital screens again. There's not piles and piles of leaflets and flyers everywhere. We've just entered into a new partnership with a food and beverage supplier that's completely carbon neutral. So them kind of decisions are really paying apart when we're doing procurement, where we're waiting a lot of things slightly different than we did before. So absolutely, really high on our agenda, really on board with that, and we'll continue to try and achieve them standards where possible. But 10% for this year, with all the other challenges, seems a reasonable target, and at the minute we're on track for that. Great question, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Nixon. I wonder if I could ask a supplementary on that. Are you targeting, are you hoping that you will be carbon neutral in your activities by, say, 2030?
Mr. Chairman, I'd love to be. I think, in context, for the kind of services that we offer, particularly swimming pools, I think it would probably be very, very difficult to aspire to make everything carbon neutral. And 2030 seems like a long time away. I'm sure it will come around very quickly. I think what we're probably more reasonably committed to, just to manage expectation, is a year-on-year review of what we're doing, analysing the data that we've got. And there's a lot of data that is available nowadays to assess what we're doing well and what we're not doing so well. We've met with companies and consultants like Leisure Energy that come around and look at our facilities and the state of facilities and offer solutions. A lot of them solutions require investment. So again, at the time where we are at the minute, we're probably not quite at that period where we've got lots of capital to fund certain investments, but we are absolutely sort of looking at what funding is available for energy reduction. And I think we're at the minute the theatre being the best example. Is we're reviewing our operations as they are, and we're trying to move them forward. And if that's a 10% year on year sort of aspirational target, and we're doing all right at the minute, I'd like to think that will continue as far as it can reasonably go. How far it can reasonably go, I don't know if I can quantify yet,
no.
But we'll certainly keep going as far as we can.
I think looking at a following item which is going to be coming up on climate change, I think, and Tracy might help me if I'm wrong, that leisure, Freedom Leisure, accounts for about 34% of energy from this borough, which is over a third. So I think these questions will be coming at you year after year with greater and greater desperation, possibly. So that we really get some movement in this area. Because, I mean, that's for all our sakes, isn't
absolutely
it?
Yeah. Absolutely. I think we'll have to continue to get creative and find ways, but say with the technical team we've got and some of the solutions we've put in, they've been quite simple solutions. So I think if we can hoover up all the simple solutions and get all them done, that would be a great foundation. And then as technology improves, there's some work with the council we've been doing with the parking department on electric vehicle charging points and different technology that continue to evolve, and yeah, we hope to be there with you. Absolutely.
But I'm just putting down the marker. I mean,
absolutely,
this
yeah.
problem isn't going to go away,
yeah,
is it? It's going
not.
To get starker and starker and more in our faces, as it were. Right across the board, in fact, all our local authority work, you know, here and elsewhere. Okay, thank you. So thank you for that, Councillor Nixon. And now, actually, before I move beyond the committee, and I will move beyond the committee, I want to make sure that all the committee members' questions are answered first. And I think, Councillor Pardesi, you have some questions, don't you?
Yes, please, Chair.
Okay, so carry on.
Two very quick questions. Are you able to honestly answer if you envisage Freedom Leisure seeing out its complete contract to the end?
Absolutely.
Right, okay.
Hopefully with an extension.
Noted.
Second question, your report acknowledges the benefits of swimming, and of course it's also a life-saving skill. And I've had several residents say to me that the school swimming lessons aren't adequate, that their child needs and wants more. So it's basically asking for reassurance to this committee that you'll do more to make sure that swimming lessons are much more easily accessible to children and young people in particular.
It's an interesting question. So we are affiliated to something called Swim England, which is a governing body for the UK, for England, for swimming. So we are affiliated to them. So we operate two different styles of lessons. We operate our own freedom leisure swimming lessons, and as we've demonstrated, that seems to be very positive, and there's been a large increase in demand for that. So then numbers have been up to 1,400, the stats is very positive. We used to have a third-party operator run some lessons at both venues and across Lichfield and Burton as well, in neighbouring authorities. And unfortunately, just prior to COVID, they were no longer trading. So what we did was we teamed with Swim England, and we basically partnered on their school swimming lesson programme, and we run their school swimming lesson programme as they advise it. And we've had quite a good success. We've got more school swimming happening now than we did before with third-party higher rep, if you like, they were delivering it for us. We are using more pool space and committed to using that daytime pool space where it's achievable and available. And if there's any more schools that want to come and do school swimming with us, we're still taking inquiries. So we've just had three or four more at Stafford and one more at Stone that I think have taken the option of taking on school swimming with us. And so we are running it as per the guidelines for Swim England. So I think we are already doing that.
And my question was particularly about any parent or carer who wants to be able to book swimming lessons and give their child an opportunity to spend more time in the pool.
And again, it's a difficult one, because I think what we've had to do in the last 12 months is be adaptable, and we've had to try and cater for a large, varied bunch of people. Our customer base is so varied. Every shape and size, and we're trying to cater for everybody. What we're trying to do is balance the programme to make sure that everyone's got enough opportunity. And if you can imagine, the swim club might want this time on an evening, and somebody else might want this, and the best time for lessons is a certain age, want to be home and bath and bed. So it's quite a complex sort of, and over time it's about evolving that programme to make sure we're covering as many bases. At the minute, I think we've probably got 50 to 100 spaces left across the contract for our Learn to Swim scheme. It's impossible to be able to sort of say, well, can we serve 2,500 children? Can we serve 3,000 children? It would probably be a case of, well, we could, but we'd have to probably reduce something else down. So it's carrying on being efficient and optimising, as many activities as possible and getting as many people through the door as we can. So again, I think we're on the same page. I'm desperate to try and commit to that, but it's probably impossible to serve everybody. We're trying to serve as many people as we possibly can while maintaining a balanced programme.
Thank you very much, Councillor Pardisi. It is virtually a matter of life or death, isn't it? Because we've seen the death toll mounting amongst young people during the heat waves during the summer. And it's tragic. There's nothing short of tragic. And obviously the more that we can do, and I agree, you're probably battling against all sorts of other people who don't seem to care about it so much, but the more we can do to get children learning to swim proficiently, the better for all of us, actually. Okay, well, thank you for that then, Councillor Pardisi. Now, are there any other questions, members, from the committee?
I've just got one.
Yeah, Councillor Nixon.
I was just curious to know a bit more about, from voluntary groups and people like that. Has there been more of those organisations coming forward to engage with you since the, easing of restrictions?
Voluntary groups specifically, or all groups?
It's just all groups, really.
I think during this period, it's been a bit hit and miss. I'll probably say during the period of the report, probably not so much. I think everyone was kind of focusing on what they needed to do, if you like. I think since the lockdowns have been released and we've been getting back to somewhere near normality, there's been an overwhelming positive response for the amount of people that want to get out and do something. And again, swimming lessons being a really good example. I think where there's confidence and desire to want to do activities, or again, the Sanford Award, educational tours, schools engaging with us, for me, I think that's been a real positive in terms of we're engaging with more people. We're then trying to get better how we manage our data and how we market to them people. We're looking at segmentation and drive time and things like that, and how we can reach more people. The half funding has been a really great example, which is the holiday activities and food, which came out a couple of weeks ago, and Liz Olson and her team have been delivering that at Doxy School to try and deliver school holiday activities and hot food. And that's something we've not done before, so that there has been doors opening, and I think that's been very positive. The voluntary bit specifically, I think there's an appetite there. It's working through that and trying to establish some lines of communication to make it a bit easier for people coming back or coming being new to volunteering and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, there was an underlying question there for me, because I'm affiliated with a charity and they actively engage with Rowley Park, and
yeah.
It's kind of, it was said, just go look on the website, prices are the prices,
okay.
Whereas it, I think as a relatively new charity, it would have been good to kind of improve that communication and see if there was some partnership, you know, some mutual benefits to
okay.
Both parties.
It sounds to me like if they wanted a price for a hire, or engaging with us as a partner,
yeah.
We maybe need to do a bit better on highlighting them people that want to work with us rather than probably use our facilities.
Yeah.
Fair point. If you want to give me that
yeah.
detail, then I'll be more than happy to take that away and work on that.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Nixon. Now, I wonder if I could also ask something. We've touched on, you know, the aspects of the gatehouse and whatnot, where we are. I've got a question about the voluntary societies, the gatehouse, the amateur stuff. And full disclosure, I'm a representative on the Stafford Borough Council, on Stafford District Arts Council. I'm a member of the executive committee of that. So obviously that's a subject very, very dear to my heart. What do you think your relationships are with, if you like, the voluntary sector within the arts groups? So things like, you know, the Stafford Players, for example, or the artist groups, or the musical groups, or the youth groups. I mean, I know that you've got a play coming on in a couple of days' time with that. But how do you feel your relationships are working with that voluntary artistic sector, the amateur artistic sector, and how do you think relations could be improved even more, and what can you do to help, and what can you do to make them thrive?
Yeah, it's a complex question. I'd like to think they're very positive. I imagine probably the reality of the situation is it's been a very interesting and difficult 16 months for everybody. The theatre, if we're talking about specifically the theatre's had to evolve and adapt and you know, become what it's becoming and be more efficient and be optimised. And I think, you know, we as a theatre, you know, the Youth Theatre is not an amateur, you know, that's, we produce that ourselves, that's something we're very passionate about. So we run the Youth Theatre. And that's had to be evolved. You know, the way we operate is evolving all the time. And I think probably what we're hoping is that some of the hirers and some of the amateur dramatic type groups are evolving with us. And we'd like to engage with them better, get around the table, have a discussion about what they're trying to achieve, what we're trying to achieve, and work with them to optimise and make their sort of clubs and schemes and their shows and presentations and productions more efficient as well as us. And a good example is probably, again, this room, this map rig is something that you know, has been in progress for a little while, and the council have been very kind in supporting us with getting this resolved. This used to be a manual operation with a fixed rig. So we'd have to have ladders up, the team would have to get up the ladder with all the heavy kit, you know, significant risk, health and safety problems. And to have this mechanised rig now that comes down on the touch of a button and brings it to low level, you can do all the work without working at height. That's a look at the future for me. So, you know, 2 years ago, having to lug a 50-kilogram pack, two-person lift up a ladder, that just, we don't want that to be happening anymore. So to get something like this, and what we've done with the Arts Council funding to optimise it even further, is we've secured or procured a seating bank that will be automated as well, which will come back into the right hand side, and for a touch of a button then we can raise and lower the rig and we can raise and lower the seating bank. That used to take probably four people 8 hours each to try and set up a manual bank of staging and then the seats on top of that, and then the same for the lighting rig. That's a great way how we've optimised it. What it probably means is the setup and the sort of the productions that they've done previously will need tweaking or changing or evolving. And I think what we'd want to do is support them on how they evolve it. But it's got to evolve, I suppose, is where we are with it. And various other clubs, I remember myself during the lockdown period speaking to a lot of the hirers because there was not many of us working. And at the time, probably, I can think one that comes in about the education and various different bits. And I did ring that person every month just to make sure they're all right. And, you know, a lot of the time there was no news, but just to have that touch point to say, I'll ring you because I said I had, and I've got no further news. I did that every month for about 10 months until we got a date for the theatre to reopen. And some of them shows that are not, you know, they don't warrant the main house because that's a 500 seat. This is going to be 150 odd. You know, we can move some of them shows and amateur dramatic type or hires from the main house into the studio, which is what we think it's for. And then that allows us to put different things on in the main house, which again optimises that programme. So there's room for everybody. I think we just need to get together and have a cup of tea and a biscuit and chat about how it's going to work.
I think the important thing really is the recognition, isn't it, that these amateur dramatic groups, amateur artistic groups and so on, are actually part of the real lifeblood of our communities.
Absolutely.
And we depend upon them for so much of the sort of the cultural worth of the area.
Just to add to Kev's point, we've invested in effectively a new management team at the club as well. So as well as the physical changes which you've seen today, there are personnel changes, and we've hopefully given us a bit of a boost with the facility change. Now it's for the team, which is a pretty senior team that we've invested in with a lot of experience and local knowledge as well. So now is the sort of time really for that team to sort of flourish and actually deliver what you're asking for really in terms of that community engagement, that engagement with the groups, and really make this facility special and successful moving forward for the long term.
Okay, thank you. Now, I don't think there are any further questions from the committee members, but I do know that Councillor Loughran want to say something, and then Councillor Hood. So can I kick off with Councillor Loughran and then Councillor Hood, please?
Well, thank you, Chairman. My question is actually in two parts. The first one I'm referring back to the very beginning of the question answer session, where you were asked about incidents. And I wonder if you could tell the committee and myself what important lessons do you think you have learnt from those incidents that you say you had early on? So that's the first part of the question. And if you ask that, answer that first of all, I'll come back to the second part, Mr. Sheehan.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Loughran.
Yeah, so every incident prompts a report. So we report on every incident. The duty manager or first aider who deals with the incident at the time produces a standard accident report. The accident report goes to our group health and safety manager, and there's a trend analysis done on that. We keep hotspot maps of any areas in the building where accidents continue to occur, and then we review risk assessments, we review documentation, safety operating procedures, standard procedures. It might be a specific procedure, i.e. safeguarding, or it could be working at heart, various different things. And if there's any action off the back of that, we produce an action report, and we try our best to get that resolved as quickly as we can. I think in this period it's probably been a little bit more difficult, but in general that's how we approach any accidents and incidents, and it's a corporate KPI standard approach.
Thank you, but you haven't really said if you learnt any lessons from any of those incidents.
I think we learned from every incident is the answer. So again, as a, you know, we've got 106 centres in the business. So it's not necessarily something that you highlight straight away from something that's happened in isolation at one of our venues, but it might be that this kind of incident happened at 10 of our venues in a certain week, and therefore that flags on the trend analysis. We report through Stitch, which is a software that tracks all that data and provides feedback. So I think there's lessons to be learned from the vast majority of accidents, incidents, or near misses. I think we've learned time and time again that we are relatively responsive in terms of things like defibs, and you know, the response we've got on defibs. We've had a rather large amount of defib use in the last 2 to 3 years, and the vast majority of them incidents have ended in quite a favourable outcome. So you know, the team are quite experienced, particularly at staff emergency centre, in dealing with medical emergencies.
Councillor Loughran, anything further?
Let me ask you, yes, I've mentioned today, and how can you reassure the residents that you're providing a safe environment at all of your facilities, not only at your leisure facilities, please? Thank you.
How do we reassure? So we produce a monthly report on our total attendances. Within the total attendances, we report figures of accidents and incidents. We also report COVID cases, customer cases of COVID, reports of COVID in isolation. And again, that goes into the national database. It goes through something called the Moving Communities platform, which tracks all that, benchmarks it against various other operators. We get an instant report back if we are above their levels, or if the non-standard accidents, or there's something peculiar about it. But yeah, the track record for the last 12 months will show, very confident, it will show we are at a very, very high level of safety, and I think we've managed COVID and the issues around COVID very well, which is proven in the data. So the accidents and incidents we have on the kind of activities that we do are below industry average and very positive.
Councillor.
I don't get out very often to scrutinise, this is why I've got all these questions. At one time, you did provide a facility for people who had medical problems, maybe mobility problems or cardiac, and these were medical referrals to you, where it would be that GPs could make referrals to you,
yep,
or it could be that other health professionals made references to you. Could you actually tell me, have you reintroduced this? Do you intend to reintroduce it? And what is the procedure going to be? Are people going to have to approach you for this service, or do they approach their medical professionals or the GPs? Thank you, Jamie.
So it's exactly the same as it was before in terms of the process. So we still take people to the door. What we've probably seen is we had some quite long discussions previously about gym resourcing and staffing levels. And what we've done under COVID is we returned to 100% staff gyms. So our gym resource, our main areas in the gyms are all fully staffed again for every hour that we're open. A lot of the staff that we've had in the gyms have been upskilled and have been through COVID and been able to train. We've upgraded them or upgraded their qualifications to include GP referral. We've not managed to get the health hub open yet, and we're not sure, and we're still working our way through when we will open the health hub back again. And we're looking to reintegrate all our GP referrals, which do come from the doctors and various other places, into that main gym area. And I think by upskilling the gym instructors and having more staff and better supervision, that we're still able to deliver that service, just slightly different to how it was before. Whether there's a need for that GP referral health hub type venue, we've not got that at Stone, so it's slightly different to Stafford. And I think we're probably early days yet, and whether we what we do with that and how we manage that part of the service. But in terms of what we're delivering, we've still got it. Doctors and various different health organisations are able to refer. We'll still take the referrals. We've still got that scheme as it was before. It's just not in a designated, sort of closed, smaller environment.
Thank you for that, Jim. Can I just say that initially you did provide an excellent service where you did have personnel there who were able to draw up a dedicated programme for the people who were attending, those people who did have medical issues, and I do hope that you can get back to providing that service.
We still do
that. It's one that was greatly appreciated, Chairman, and I think, you know, that the people of Stafford would appreciate having that returned to us. Thank you very much, Chairman, and thank you for your answer.
We are still doing it, still in progress as it is. So the programme writing is still there, still a consultation with a level 3 GP referral instructor, and that's still happening.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Councillor Loughran. Councillor Hood.
Thank you, Chairman. Good evening, gentlemen. Firstly, I'd like to congratulate you on the speedy way that you got the Leisure Centre back into working order after the devastation of the damage that was done. For those of you in the room who don't know, the Leisure Centre windows, I think they smashed every single window, didn't they?
They did.
With some kind of catapult, or it was a ball bearing damage. But well done on that.
Thank you.
The question I'd like to give to you, the chairman asked you about community participation. The Stafford and Stone Canoe Club, which is just across the field from the Stone Leisure Centre, once again, they've done exceedingly well within the Olympic Games, and Adam Burgess missed out by an absolute droplet on the gold medal. I know that they've approached you to ask if they can use the pool, and they're willing to buy their own canoes so that the canoes will be sterile and stored to go onto the swimming pool, and they're quite willing to do antisocial acts as well. The Canoe Club this year has taken members, young members, from as far as 85 mile radius, and their membership is increasing all the time. Every single one of the committee and the members are all volunteers. No one gets paid, and they do all their own groundwork. And they're recently having quite a lot of work done with the help of Staffordshire Council clearing diseased trees. I'd like to ask you if you could, in the very near future, perhaps embrace the Canoe Club and see if there is a way that you can have them practice. I don't like to see our youngsters paddling on the canal. It's not good. If they fall in, it's not good. And very often the river is too high for them to paddle on, and there's lots of competitions going on. So do you think there's some way that you could welcome them to the pool? Thank you, gentlemen.
Absolutely, the answer, and I think we can demonstrate that. We did make contact, and I think you kindly put us in touch. We've not met face to face yet. We've had several phone calls and several emails back and forth. I think in the first instance, what we absolutely wanted to work with them. I think what we were trying to achieve or trying to do was to try and find a way of using the canoes we've already got at Stafford Leisure Centre. So if they're driving 85 miles round trip, it's a lot closer to Stafford than Stone. And I thought that would be a good way of establishing it and getting it in and getting it working. And then it was in my mind that further down the line we would maybe be able to move that to Stone. There are storage issues around it, and maybe sort of smaller operational type details, but I think for me, I'm absolutely committed to working with them and maybe meeting them next, and again, sort of finding a way for both parties to work to get to that. For me, it's just a case of smoothing that journey of how we can get to it quickly and reasonably well, with that as well, losing it from Stafford, because I don't know if there's demand for sort of opposing clubs or organisations trying to deliver it. The canoe is one of the sessions and activities that we've not managed to sort of reintroduce at Stafford yet. So high on the agenda, would love to, just need a little bit more time, but absolutely committed to working on it.
Thank you, really, Chairman. They absolutely don't want to go to Stafford, to come here to Stafford.
Okay.
The facility that they've got is second to none. You know, it's a fabulous facility. So they need to be near their home base.
Okay.
So if you could possibly get rid of that, that would be absolutely
try very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you, Councillor Hood. And now I know he's been waiting in the wings, as it were. Councillor Smith.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. just to add a bit more to your confidence regarding the amateur production. I don't know whether you met the new theatre manager tonight, Tim Ford. Did you meet him?
I believe so.
He's away. Right, well, of course, he's very theatrical. And he wrote a two-page introduction in the latest programme. But if you would have met him, he would have told you that when he was in his youth, he was a member of the youth theatre here. So I'm sure he will be very pleased to continue with that. And he will do his best to do so.
Pleased to hear that. Now, we've got, yes, Councillor Trowbridge.
So name on the badge, as a standard policy, we just have the names. But I don't see any reason why we can't have volunteers on it, if that's what people want, so that's an easy one. In terms of numbers, we did have approximately 120 volunteers, and I think that's been reduced slightly, but I think somewhere in the region of 100 volunteers across the contract. We've just been recently talking about a benefits package around volunteering and what else we can offer and what we can do to engage better with potential volunteers. And I think that's something we could really work on to try and do a better job at that. So, yeah, that'll be part of the agenda, and we'll come back to you with an action plan for that. Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much, Councillor Strowbridge. And I think that really seems to... Oh, sorry, Councillor Kemp.
Yeah, there is, we've been critical asking questions, but I think we should thank them for something, and that is to do with school swimming. If you look on page 25, it says that NTrust, and we all know what NTrust is, something to do with County Council, no longer offered the service, and Freedom Leisure stepped in. And I think they should be complimented about that.
Mike, thank you for that comment, Councillor Kemp. Well, gentlemen, may I say thank you very much indeed on behalf of the committee and all the other councillors and officers present here. Thank you very much for presenting the paper and then for your willingness to answer questions about all the issues which are being raised. So thank you very much. It's been a most informative session. It has gone on. It's over an hour. I'm sure it seems much, like much less to you. But it has been just over an hour, so we've gone through quite a number of things. So thank you again for your attendance, for the paper you've presented, and for your answers to the questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and I should go off and have a jolly stiff drink.
Chairman, can I move that we accept the two recommendations on the report?
Yeah, thank you. All in favour?
Aye.
Good. Anyone against? No. Thank you. Right, so now we now move on to, we're only on to item number 7B. And Tracy is going to present this paper on climate change and green recovery for quarter one.
Can I just ask you, is our climate change officer here tonight?
No.
I was just going to ask Chair if it's unreasonable to ask or to expect our climate change officer to be present at meetings, particularly when we're discussing
climate change.
Discussing climate change and have reports before us.
Through you, Chair, I'm strategic lead for climate change, so it's probably more at the time I am here.
No. Okay, thank you very much indeed. Tracy, do you want to carry on with that? Isn't technology wonderful?
It is, now we've had to change our passwords.
Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. So this is quarter one performance report for climate change and green recovery. So the report is here because the work that we will be undertaking for climate change will have a financial element to it. So this is why it's being received here at resources scrutiny. I just want to add that there are some elements that will still be reported through to economic scrutiny in terms of the local plan and also in terms of the community focus to community scrutiny as well. But the report is as set out. If I could just draw members' attention to section 5, this provides members with a summary of the progress that we've made so far. So I'd just like to just run through it briefly. So in terms of 5.3, so we have appointed a new climate change officer who started with me in April, but she was unable to start working until June. So she's absolutely brilliant, and she's hit the ground running. She's doing really well. We've also set up a new internal climate change and green recovery group. So this contains officers from across the whole authority who have specialist leads in all of the areas that we will need to help us drive forward the delivery plan that accompanies the strategy. So our climate change emergency declaration was around reducing emissions from our own activities by 2040. So in order for us to be able to drive that forward, we've commissioned a carbon audit, and that's provided us with a really, really useful baseline of information that we will use now to determine what targets we are going to reduce our emissions by year on year. So I've set out sort of the percentages for that in section 5.4. It's on page 32, the top of page 32. We've also been working in partnership with Keele University in the Centre for Alternative Technology for the past 6 months. So we have a partnership with them and all of the other Staffordshire districts across Staffordshire and Stoke-on-Trent, and we are working with them to look at how what the carbon zero requirements look like pan Staffordshire and Stoke-on-Trent, because as you can imagine it's quite complex. So we've been looking at this and started mapping out all of this information across structures, communication, collaboration, values and mindsets. And we're also looking at setting up a very small panel of community representatives to help support us with our approach to working with the community. And in terms of mitigating and adapting to climate change, so this is another objective that was in our strategy. Eleanor Warren, who is our new climate change officer, she's been undertaking a risk-based assessment of all vulnerabilities affecting the borough, and that will be fed into our local climate impact profile. And we're hoping to have that completed by the end of October, so we'll be able to share that with the committee. And then another business objective is around continuing to implement our green recovery objectives. So we've done some work to support the Borough's Nature Recovery Network and to assess the air quality for the Southern Staffordshire Special Area of Conservation. So the report is as it's set out. There's a narrative update for quarter one that's contained on page 34 and 35. Members will notice for quarter one performance this time we have actually got rid of the emojis. And we have just included text for the performance narrative, just to make it easy and to keep the discussion focused, really. So I'm happy to take questions, Chair.
Thank you very much indeed, Tracy. Members, any comments, questions on that? Councillor Kemp.
Yes, Chairman. The 3.1, I see the figure of still 2040. And yet there's a national condemnation of councils, maybe county councils in the main, about the fact that people are saying, yes, we want to be a good the good authority, we want to be carbon neutral, but don't seem to follow the lines of getting to be carbon neutral. And I do feel, you know, that we ought to follow. Even the county council here have gone for 2030. Not that they may have wanted 2030, but it's only 2030. So, I mean, is our office a suggestion that we should reduce that?
Through you, Chair, so the Staffordshire County Council's climate emergency date is 2015, and it's 2015. We've set a date of 2040. There's probably two other districts in Staffordshire that have set a date of 2030. So the majority, when I have actually conducted research around this, there's an awful lot of authorities across the whole of England who have set 2040 goals.
Yeah, it's not helping, is it?
Mr. Chairman, also one of the largest companies in the world called Amazon has got the target date of 2040. And so they're far bigger than we are. They've got more resources and they're looking at 2040. So I think for us looking at 2040, I think is good news.
If I may just comment about
that. Yeah, quite a lot of people evidently do want to go. So Councillor Kemp, carry on Councillor Kemp,
well,
to begin with.
Amazon, you can complain about Amazon, but we've had two phone calls from them today about things we haven't bought. So they're definitely locked
in
a lot of hot air.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Brown, and then Councillor Pardesi.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll make a point of bringing this up every time it comes up. But we will have no chance of being carbon neutral until the country embraces nuclear power. Absolutely no chance. We need it. And that is the only way we're going to achieve it. It will save the planet, and I will bring it up every time this comes up.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Councillor Pardesi.
Chair, just to say, well, if Amazon has set that target, that's definitely an incentive for me to lower it to 2030, Chair. And there is such a thing as setting a precedent. We could be the one.
We could indeed. You're letting that hang in the air, aren't you, Councillor Pardesi?
I don't think it's unrealistic, Chair. Right. It's a matter of political will.
Indeed, so much is. So much is. Any other comments, councillors, on that? Councillor Kemp, you're coming for a second bite of the cherry.
Yeah, are we going to talk about the page numbers?
It's certainly. Well, I was thinking about going through this, you know, after the initial exchange. Well, we're on page 30, 31, 32,
33. At the top of 33 it says, work is underway to set up a small panel of community representatives to work with us. Now, I know the chief executive will smile at this. Who are these people, this small panel, who are they, and how were they selected?
Through you, Chair, so we haven't set the panel up yet.
Not yet.
So we don't know who people are as of yet, but as soon as I know, I will obviously share that.
Thank you very much.
I suppose, are they going to be...
That's the questions that council will be interested.
Presumably there'll be a representative sample. There's no biases or partialities. It's incredibly difficult to get a representative sample. Good luck.
Chair, I guess that does depend on what we're going to use the panel for, because there will be groups who will be self-selecting who feel that they have particular expertise or interest in the matter, from whom no doubt we can learn. Mm. But if we want a panel of representative residents so that we can try out ideas, that may be a different sort of panel.
Okay, but we'll be aware of all those eddies and whirlpools around in terms of prejudices, biases, partialities, and all the rest of it, as well as expertise.
Indeed.
Right. 33, 34, 35. Right, well, nothing further on that. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Tracy, for for introducing that one. And you're on next as well. You've got a dual starring role here.
Can you move that we note the report, please, Mr. Chairman?
Thank you. Report noted. Do you all agree with that?
Aye.
Good, okay. Item 7C now, and this is again from Tracy, and it's quarter one performance reporting.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So right. This is quarter one reporting for business objective four. So the report is as it's set out. Members will notice that we have actually included a stronger focus on shared service this time. And as such, we've included information around building control shared service. We've also got, we've retained the revenues and benefits shared service information in there as well. So the performance indicators are as set out on page 39. There's just one indicator that is below target, and that has an improvement report for quarter one, and that just is around LI18, building control, customer satisfied or very satisfied with the service. And Paul Beckley is here tonight, so if members did want to ask any focus questions to him, he's available to answer those. He has provided a contact for current performance on page 40, and then we have the narrative updates on page 41 and 42. And they're all displaying as being on track. So happy to take questions, Chair.
Right, thank you very much indeed, Tracy. Members, any overarching questions? Otherwise, I'll go through them page by page. And to, if stop me if you.
Before we get to the enjoyed thing, to explain the financial information, but it's when we do that.
Yes, and yeah. Well, do you want to do the financial information?
It'd be helpful, Chair.
Yeah, I think so. It'd be a good time to do it.
So thank you, Chairman. I bring apologies from Emma Fulliger, who everybody will be aware has taken over as the Section 151 officer and our lead in terms of finance following Bob Keane's departure. In consultation with me, rather than come tonight, she's focusing on the work that she needs to do to complete the final accounts, because there is a delay in the provision of them and therefore the budget monitoring information, which will now be available at the end of quarter two and will come to your November scrutiny committee. We apologise for that. This is due to some problems that we've had in the implementation of the new financial management and e-payment system for the authority. The finance system went live in April and the e-payments in June, and that's resulted in a tremendous amount of work, and as a result we are still in the process of completing the closure of accounts. As you will understand, we give priority in the finance system during April and May to ensure that all of our external elements available to the public, such as creditor payments, grants and housing benefits, were operational first, because clearly ensuring those payments went through was critical. And therefore there has been a delay, for which we apologise. Emma and her team are working extremely hard to do that, and we felt it was better that she continued with that work this evening rather than come tonight. So I fear I'm a poor substitute, but you will see her in November.
Right. Well, we look forward to that. Or any comments on that, members? No, that's fine. Okay, well, thank you for that statement on behalf of Emma as well. Thank you. So this is now Tracy again, quarter one. You've dealt with that, haven't you, with performance reporting? I'm going to do it page by page, and just tell me when you want to stop me. Page 36, page 37.
Yes, Chair.
Yes.
Page 37, yes?
Paragraph 5.3, building control satisfaction survey has moved over to an online survey, and level feedback received for quarter one is too late to draw a conclusion. The building control satisfaction survey, how is this promoted to those that are making applications? Are they aware of it? How are they made aware of it?
Would you like to come to the table, Paul?
Prior to the pandemic, all of we were very paper-based. So at the completion of every project which we did the building control on, we would issue a completion certificate and a paper survey went out with that completion certificate with a prepaid envelope asking them to return them. And we got a reasonable return, about 15 to 20%, which for a customer survey I was told was a good result. Since COVID, we've gone demonstrating paper, so our completion certificates are emailed out to every applicant who has a completion certificate. In that, we put a link to a SurveyMonkey survey and asked them if they would mind filling that out. Unfortunately, much as I would have thought, that's easier than filling in a two-page paper survey. It appears to be more difficult because we're not getting a response to those. So we need to raise that profile of them seeing that link, that web link to the SurveyMonkey with their completion certificates. So that's the reason why, and that's how it, so every email that goes out to the completion certificate has that link on to the survey.
I think given the fact that some of the applications seem to take a long time and number of residents that contact councillors with regards to it, I should imagine that by the end of them actually receiving their finalised application, that they would have been more interested in being able to do a survey during the middle of it rather than at the end of it. Some applications are going on for 12 months plus.
Not building control applications. The completion certificates are issued within 5 days of the project being completed. And our actual processing of the plans and applications percentages in there, sort of 70% within 3 weeks. Building regulation applications are dealt with very, very speedily. We've never had any. If I take our customer satisfaction rating when we got the paper results was between 95% and 98%. Satisfied or very satisfied. Our customer satisfaction, and that has been through all the years of shared service.
Okay.
It's always been very high.
Right.
We've never had, except for the odd customer, the dissatisfaction and our turnaround rates, I think, are reflected in the other statistics.
Okay. Any other comments on that? Yes, Councillor Pardesi.
Yes, sir.
No, you don't need to call me sir. I'm retired.
Thank you, Chair. On similar point, the satisfaction surveys, I'm not the only one that is concerned that the pandemic is being used as an excuse, for want of a better word, to digitalise everything, and there seems to be very little talk about when, hopefully, things will more or less be back to where they were previously, that there are various areas that we can resort to going back to where we were before. And the perception out there is, A, that the pandemic is being used as an excuse to bring in these changes, and secondly, that it's a way of deliberately excluding people and putting them off from putting forward their responses because basically no one's interested in them, and it suits organisations not to have that feedback. And a choice is fine, but it makes sense that completing a quick form, making a phone call or whatever, if you put it online and you have to go through a link or a website or whatever, I think most people out there would say, yes, that's no surprise, the response that we're getting. Thank you,
Chair. I would say probably 95% of applications we get in by email, we get very little post coming in. And it's, with respect, Councillor, I always felt it a bit strange that we used to get everything in electronically, or with 95%, and we then responded with post, as opposed to doing it electronically. Because, say, all our plans are now emailed in, all the forms are emailed in, and through the planning portal and things like that. and not about 95% we get very little coastal applications in, and that just seems to me strong. And I suppose the other thing is obviously the green agenda and carbon. We're trying to get away from producing paper, but there are obviously people who do only use paper, and that's another bit. I think we've got to remember that. But we get very few paper applications in. The vast majority of our portal or even directly emailed nowadays.
Chair, if I could just add that we're always looking for ways to improve our services. Digitalisation is one means that's open to us, but we do offer a number of other channels for customers to access our services, and there's never been any talk about us getting rid of that. So we do a number of things. Digitalisation is only one of them.
Councillor Nixon, you wanted to say something.
I was just going to say, I think the council should be applauded for the digitisation of so many of its services. I think the fact that we've embraced COVID and used it as an opportunity to accelerate and modernise and transform is a great thing. Obviously, there are people out there who aren't as comfortable with it, but I think the fact that we're listening and understanding of that, that's good. But the general public wants to experience, what they get when they're using Amazon, other services. They expect the local authorities to behave in that manner as well.
Okay. I hope we haven't embraced COVID too closely. When you say embrace COVID, I'd rather keep COVID at a bit of arm's length, really. But never mind. Surely the important thing is that we ought to be having a balance. So for those who are comfortable using computers in all sorts of sophisticated levels, we've got the options for them to do that. But we should also have the options available for those who are, for one reason or another, weak on the usage of computers and technology and so on.
Yes, Chair, and we do. There are some cohorts in our communities that are digitally excluded. Which is the reason why we offer a number of different channels of communication for people to access our services.
Right, okay. Yes, now, Councillor Smith, you want to
say. Thank you, Chairman. I just wanted to remind people that the Paul is operating in a competitive area. You do not have to use the council's building control service. You can use a private contract.
Yeah.
So if he's turning around his responses in 4 or 5 days, that's good news, because, as I say, he's in a competitive environment.
Yeah, absolutely right, yes. And we are in a competitive environment for that, yeah. Gone are the days when, you had a monopoly on that sort of thing, alas. But there we are. Thank you very much for that point, Councillor. Councillor Kemp.
Yeah, can I just continue this bit about technology? There are a number of people out there of a certain generation who cannot handle the technology, and also there are people who have tried. I've had a complaint about somebody who came and it's a slightly different area, it's not building control, anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's to get a permit for a brown bin. And this person ended up making a mistake on a car, and everything has shut down on that. So, it's not easy. It's not easy for the older generation to deal with the technology. I'm very lucky. I've been dealing with computers since the very small one where you played a game. But then I had somebody teach me. 11-year-old lad taught me how to do it. I don't know what he's doing now, but he's obviously very technical minded. But what I want to talk about is on page 40, if you can have a look at that. And it's a very interesting comment. And I have to be rude and put my glasses on to read it. Paul, you're right. You're right in the improvement actions to be taken. Raise the profile of the survey where possible and separate Stafford Borough Council from Cannock from Cannock Chase Council. Now that to me is one of the most important bits of this committee, and evidence that says here, separate the Borough Council from the Cannock Chase. Can you explain that to me, please?
through the chair. Again, back to the paper ones, we used to put our reference number, we were able to put our reference number on the paper one. Obviously the reference numbers for the Stafford Borough applications are different from the Cannock Chase ones with the different prefix, so we easily know which area the applicator is in. At the present, there doesn't appear to be a facility where we can do that in Survey Monkey, so we need to be able to do something. So we've either got to put an additional question in, so people can say what council area it is in, if they're willing to say that, or we do some sort of different way of doing the survey. So prior to that, it was very, very, very straightforward. It wasn't something, to be honest with you, I thought about before we started using this, going to digital on it. I'd sort of forgotten about that, to be honest with you. Yes.
So a lot down the road, I think, and we've took them over already. Or, as I've seen one or two things, when a certain friend of mine has done Zoom, is that them down the road have took us over. You know, and I do understand what you're saying. You do need to separate into Cannock Chase because their problems are totally different from the Borough Council. Thank you.
Right, okay. Councillor Smith.
Do you send reminders out? Because when I get my car serviced and don't respond, I keep getting reminders. You haven't told us how well we did.
No, we don't. That's something we could look at.
Well, there's sometimes, I mean, I'm getting to the stage now, sometimes, every time you buy something, you have an evaluation form. You know, I think, well, I just want to buy a coffee maker or something. I don't want to evaluate the thing. So I ignore it. I delete. I delete with gay abandon now. Right, so now we are 38, 39, 40, 41. 41. There we are. So that's that. Nothing else on that. So we note that, presumably. Note that report.
Sorry,
that's it. Yes. Thank you.
Page,
have I missed one? Yeah. Page 40. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I said page 40. Sorry, page 42. Have you got something to say?
No.
Oh, no. That's
right. You missed it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. All agreed?
Aye.
Excellent. So now we come on to our final one, you all breathing a sigh of relief, the work programme. And thank you, Tracy. And you can see that our next meeting is pretty heavily populated. There's an awful lot there. And we'll be lucky if we get home by midnight, I should think, at that point.
I just ordered a taxi.
So, in fact, I believe there has been a suggestion that, I mean, obviously we want scrutiny of the waste contract, that's really vital, number one on the agenda, very important. But then the COVID-19 recovery and the gender pay gap report could be moved to the January meeting, where there's rather less congestion. And that would free up things a bit in November. So we'll do that sort of adjustment there. And then the other thing I note, the future items, it says on page 46, the Freedom Leisure Annual Report. Again, the suggestion is that we should have the next Freedom Leisure Annual Report in August 2022. So we're thinking ahead, planning ahead, and so put it in then, so we can fit that in as and when necessary. And of course, at some point, of course, we've got to fit in an update from the Chief Executive, haven't we?
So you look terribly busy, Jim.
I'm sure we could find a little bit of space for you, Jim. Right. So that I think that's it, Chair, members. So thank you very much indeed for all the work you've put in tonight, for all the comments, all the questions. Held people to account, which is excellent, which is what it should be about. So thank you very much indeed. Thank you to all the officers who've helped in all sorts of ways, and in terms of presentation, for example, and also in terms of, you know, providing some questions for us. And Lee, thank you very much indeed. That was really greatly appreciated and very pertinent. And I think all the members certainly appreciated that sort of steer for them. So thank you very much.
I wish you all for sat here. You never go.
was poised on some match 342.
We could go back to page 42 if you like.
Page 42, all
after. It's like the cue, isn't it? The prompt that never comes. Okay, but anyway, thank you very much indeed. Good night.